What options does a mother have during a medically complicated pregnancy? Find out more on Gospel of Life. Hello, I'm Reverend Frank Pavone, Director of Gospel of Life Ministries. Welcome to our program, joined by Janet Marana, our Associate Director. And Janet, one of the questions that often arises in the whole debate over abortion is, what happens when the mother's life or health is at risk? Is abortion permitted in those instances? And what we're going to discuss today, I always tell people there are two levels to the answers to that question. First of all, there's the moral question. Is it ever okay to kill a baby to achieve any kind of good result? And the answer is no.
No.
If I had a baby in my hands right now and somebody said, well, either kill that baby or I'm going to blow up this city, I would not be morally justified to kill the baby. The end doesn't justify the means, and that's a biblical principle.
Right.
But today we're going to address a different aspect of the question, and that's the medical question. Is it even ever necessary medically to kill a baby for the sake of the mother?
And as we know from people like Dr. Byron Calhoun, who we're going to hear from in a little while, never. The answer is never medically necessary. Because what people have to understand is abortion by itself, besides the fact that it kills the baby, is such an invasive procedure for the mother.
Yes.
It's not done in a medically sound way. And how anyone could think that dismembering a child limb by limb, torn into pieces, is somehow going to benefit the mother's health. That's not the case. What has to happen is, and first of all, there are doctors that specialize in fetal maternal medicine. So for anyone listening right now that knows someone who's pregnant and they're beginning to have complications in the pregnancy, the first piece of advice is don't listen to the first person that you're going to, the first doctor. If they're telling you you need to have an abortion, you need to get a second opinion.
Yes. Well, first of all, we can provide maternal fetal medicine specialists who are pro-life and who are willing to hear from people who have these questions and want to do things that are ethically sound as well as medically appropriate. On our website at gospeloflife.com, we have a link that provides assistance in maternal fetal medicine. Now, maternal fetal medicine, of course, is that subspecialty of obstetrics and gynecology that focuses on medically complicated pregnancies and acknowledges, as medical science has been acknowledging more and more over the past several decades, actually, that when we treat a pregnant woman, we're treating two patients.
That's right.
There are two patients here, the mother and the child. People like Dr. Byron Calhoun are experts in maternal fetal medicine, and they are pro-life. So this is the first resource that we're going to provide. Secondly, you know, you were talking about the medical dimensions of, you know, you don't kill a baby in order to provide a medical benefit. People need to understand something about abortion. There is no demonstrable benefit to it at all.
That's right.
I mean, this is the only surgical procedure that's being carried out now in America for which nobody has ever demonstrated any medical benefit, much less that the life or health of the mother is going to be preserved. There's no medical benefit at all. In fact, I maintain that you shouldn't even call abortion a medical procedure, because a medical procedure, when you think about it, helps the body to do something that it's supposed to be doing, but
is having trouble doing. Right.
And you help it along.
Mm-hmm.
Here you have a woman who has a pregnancy. In a pregnancy, the body is doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing, nourishing and nurturing and protecting that child. And abortion goes in and interrupts all that.
That's right.
It's the exact opposite of medicine.
Well, what these doctors will do, Father, is they take that woman through her pregnancy, obviously, as far along as possible. I mean, she might have to be hospitalized. She might have to be watched over a little bit more carefully. She might have to be put on an IV. Certain things might have to be done. And the goal is to let that mother come along that pregnancy as far along as possible, so that at the same time, if they can get that baby, I think Dr. Calhoun will say things about 21 weeks, that baby is able to be what they say resuscitated and possibly saved. That's the proper way to do this, not go in an invasive way and destroy the life of the child with no hope and telling the mother, well, that's the best we can do. No. Medical science in this day and age can do far better than just offer an abortion to a woman who is in this kind of medical crisis.
Well, let's listen to what Dr. Calhoun said to us in a recent interview. Dr. Byron Calhoun, my friends, is the president of the American Association of Pro-Life OBGYNs and also the president of the Pro-Life Society of Maternal Fetal Medicine. Here's what Dr. Calhoun has to say.
If you look at the numbers of complications that we see in this country, actually a very, very small handful are actually life-threatening to mother. One of them is called primary pulmonary hypertension, where the mother is unable to perfuse her lungs because of high pressures. That is an obstetrical emergency, but that's one of the few times that you'll see a patient with a medical complication who requires perhaps early delivery or has a complication that's truly life-threatening. Like I said, I've been doing maternal fetal medicine for now over 15 years, obstetrics well over 20. And there's really a handful of cases that I can remember, maybe four or five, that really had the mother's life at risk prior to the ability to resuscitate the baby at about 24 weeks. And those are the patients who have perhaps a severe preeclampsia or toxemia. There are those who get ruptured membranes and will get septic or toxic and infected and will need to be delivered. What's interesting as you talk about this argument is that people always somehow believe they have to kill the baby to save the mother's life. And that's, in fact, the context that's presented. In fact, that's never necessary. And I'll emphasize it again, never necessary to kill the baby to save the life of the mother. You may have to deliver the baby early and it dies from prematurity, but you don't have to kill the baby. And in fact, what you really ought to do, in my opinion, is you ought to do the best medicine, which is to take care of mother and baby and get the baby to ability to be resuscitated and then deliver the baby and give it an opportunity to be resuscitated.
Well, we're grateful to Dr. Calhoun and all his associates, and they are ready to help you, brothers and sisters, and anyone you know who has a medically complicated pregnancy and who wants to do the right thing. And speaking about the right thing, Janet, Dr. Calhoun has pioneered something else to help those who have a diagnosis of a child that they're carrying who is terminally ill.
That's right.
Maybe the baby's brain is not developing or there's some other problem by which the doctor concludes this child is only going to live for a very short time, will probably die before birth or very shortly thereafter. Now, in those cases, some people, as you know, are tempted to say, well, then I'll just abort the child. But if you abort the child, you're killing your child who instead needs special care. Dr. Calhoun has developed a special option here, applying the principles of hospice to the unborn child. Hospice in which the whole family participates in the process of accompanying a dying member of the family in those last stages of life. Well, now we have perinatal hospice for the unborn child, and Dr. Calhoun has engineered this together with others in the medical profession. It has begun in various parts of the country, and we've seen how helpful this has been to the families of children who are terminally ill.
That's right. And, you know, a lot of times, too, when these diagnoses are given, very often, sometimes doctors who are saying to the mother, well, your baby's going to die anyway, or this is going to happen, so we're going to have an abortion. You know, sometimes it's more than just that. They're worried about medical malpractice and a whole host of other reasons as to why they're offering the abortion ahead of time to that mother. But the other thing, too, is we have to remember, again, that what an invasive procedure that abortion is. And like Dr. Calhoun has pioneered the perinatal hospice, is to bring that mother along and the child as far as long as possible and then deliver the baby early and give that baby the best you can until it is going to pass away naturally. And that doesn't mean just put the baby to the side and let it die, but do everything possible in the time that that child is meant to live.
Let's hear Dr. Calhoun again speak about this concept of the perinatal hospice. Once again, Dr. Byron Calhoun.
Well, the genesis of this was back many years ago when the first partial birth abortion debate came about, and I realized as a maternal fetal medicine I didn't really have a good program or a good way to take care of patients who had a fatal fetal diagnosis or a in utero diagnosis. And we basically took the concepts of hospice that Cecily Saunders had done in the 1960s, and we took and moved them from the end of later in life or adult hospice and moved those to before delivery. And using the same compassionate basic principles of hospice in a baby that's not born, the thing most people fear actually in an end of life or dying is abandonment. And that's what these patients really fear, is that we as physicians will abandon them. So instead, our program involves multiple disciplinary approach using chaplains, parish priests, our sonographers, my residents, nursing, and physicians. And we draw these families very close and hold them very close and really help them work through the inevitable death and the grief that will go along with the loss of a child, much as it would any other family member that's felt very deeply and that's very wanted. Most of these pregnancies are very wanted pregnancies, not babies that are not wanted.
So how would a family connect with existing perinatal hospices, or even how would people in a community get one started?
Well, there's a list served that actually is http://// perinatal hospice that actually has about 28 national hospices listed. Or if they wanted to contact my organization, which is the American Association of Pro-Life Obstetricians and Gynecologists, at www.aaplog.org, we could put them in touch with pro-life maternal fetal medicines and or pro-life individuals and with hospice. If you're interested in starting a hospice, certainly contact myself, and I know most of the people that are doing hospice work and can actually either come visit, present the medical side of it and the safety of hospice, and the overwhelming acceptance, 75 to 85% of people, if offered a hospice, will do it and are very grateful for it. And also we can put them in contact with people who've started hospice so they can get a grassroots approach of, you know, how do I start one in my community? What do we do to get a 501c3? How do we work with the hospital? All those real practical nuts and bolts issues. You know, how do we get volunteers to help us? That sort of thing.
Well, there you have it. He's willing and ready to assist. And in many places, the perinatal hospice is just beginning to become known. This is a relatively new concept. And, of course, there's information about it also up on our website at gospellife.com. You know, I think when I hear these stories of the wife of Senator Rick Santorum, Karen Santorum wrote a book called Letters to Gabriel because she had a child in this circumstance, didn't she, who was not going to live very long. She did not abort that child. She wrote letters to that child every day and published them in this book. And like so many couples who have decided to preserve the lives of these children, it was so meaningful to them to be able to be with, to see, to hold, to love that child, even if that child lived for only a few minutes after birth.
Well, that's right, because, see, just like most people are familiar with a hospice program, and just like in a hospice program, they bring the entire family into the dying patient family in around to surround the person, make them as comfortable as possible. That's exactly what the perinatal hospice does for that unborn child or the child that's born and only going to live for maybe minutes or hours. Mm-hmm. It's very good. And so people who are listening right now, you might want to know, gee, how could we get a hospice program like this, this perinatal hospice in our community? Well, first of all, start with the people who are running a regular hospice program in your community and make them aware of it. Mm-hmm. So many people don't know that this is an option. So start by taking the information and that you heard from here from Dr. Calhoun and us here on the show and make them aware of it. Talk to your pastor, because this is a very pastorly way of ministering to people in your congregation who, you know, I'm sure many pastors have had these hard cases where families come to them so distraught because they get this terminal diagnosis. And maybe they are being counseled to have an abortion, and maybe the pastor doesn't know any better. Well, now this is a better answer. And bring this information to your pastor so he can be in the picture and maybe help start a perinatal hospice program in their community. Because, see, the clergymen are very much part of that perinatal hospice program. A lot of times they'll be brought to the hospital to help say special prayers with the family right before the child dies.
You know, some people will say, well, if I hear that my unborn child is going to die, why can't I have an abortion? Because the child is going to die anyway. The fact is, everybody is going to die anyway.
Right.
Now, Scripture says that for God, 1,000 years are like a day, and a day is like 1,000 years. What is it that makes us think that God sees any differently a life that is lived for 70 or 80 years and a life that may be lived for 8 or 9 months? What, from God's perspective, is the difference ultimately? In the light of eternity, we're all here for just the blink of an eye. And the value of life is not measured in terms of hours or months or years. It's measured by the fact that, first of all, it comes from a loving God, and secondly, that it's entrusted to a loving family and a loving community. It's measured by love. The parents that love that child, who may be deformed, who may have a genetic abnormality, the love that they express toward that child during the pregnancy and for as many minutes or hours or days as the child might live after birth, that's what matters. And that's what matters in their own ability to deal with the situation, because, again, so many people are tempted to think about abortion like a magic wand. Well, you know, this child apparently didn't turn out right, so let's just take a big eraser and do away with that. What they're not taking into account is the effect that that abortion has on them when they realize, wait a minute, I took an action here to kill my innocent child in that child's moment of greatest need. They don't think that's going to affect them later on?
Oh, it absolutely does. And I know, again, that from, again, the Voices of the Women, the Silent and More Awareness campaign, some of them, unfortunately, and this happens a lot to couples, you know, who are married and, you know, they're counseled to have an abortion. And then they go on, you know, to have other children. And they come back to that child that they gave into what the bad advice they got from a doctor to have the abortion. And it gnaws at them. They, you know, until they seek healing, it bothers them for the remainder of their life, until they begin to seek some healing for that experience. So having that abortion is not, like you said, Father, a big eraser that you're just pushing that problem away and moving on. It'll always leave a mark in their lives.
You know, we should say something at this point about those who have miscarriages, because
that's right.
Something that is happening, it's a good trend all across the country, and to me it's a sign of a reemerging culture of life, is that those who have miscarriages are more and more turning to their doctors, the hospital, the clergy, the funeral directors, and saying, we want to honor our child with a burial, with a funeral, just like we would honor a child that might die at 2 years of age or 5 years of age.
That's right.
What's the difference? Again, it's not measured in terms of time. The fact is, this is our child. This is a real life. This is a loss that we want to appropriately mourn. And we want to call upon doctors and clergy and hospitals and funeral directors and cemeteries and all the professionals that are involved in taking care of people who conceive and bear a child and then lose that child, to say, let's start treating children who die by miscarriage the same way we treat born children.
That's right.
Who die young.
And we've been contacted, you know, Father, in the past by couples who actually have taken that route. And
yes.
Not long ago, we were very fortunate to be in North Carolina with a couple. They lost that baby at 6 weeks. And they had a good doctor and funeral director. They had a funeral. And we were there with the family at the graveside. The baby's name is Felicity.
Mm-hmm.
And we were there to bless the grave and say prayers with the entire family, grandparents, parents, siblings, all there. And they go to that graveside periodically and pray to Felicity.
It's beautiful. You know, in a culture of life, you welcome the child in the womb. In a culture of life, you name the child in the womb. In the culture of life, you welcome that child, whether that child is sick or healthy. You care for that child, whether that child lives a long time or a short time. And in a culture of life, if that child dies, you give that child the proper reverence, the proper burial, and the proper funeral rites. This is all part of building the culture of life. And that's why we're so excited that this is starting to happen more and more. Whether it's perinatal hospice, proper funeral services for miscarried children, or even something as simple as giving the name to a child before the child is born. More and more people find out the gender of the child before he or she is born. Give that child a name.
That's right.
Because that's already a person. As we've often said, you're not expecting a baby. If you're expecting...
You already have the baby.
You already have the baby. You're not going to be a mother. You already are a mother.
Well, it's at Gospel Life, several of our employees are having babies right now, but we named those child. They knew before the babies were born. We brought in those pictures, and we had baby Anthony, calling him baby Anthony before he was born. That's what people should do, for the correct attitude.
That's a culture of life.
That's right.
Thanks, Janet, and thank you for what you do, brothers and sisters, in building a culture of life. We're ready to partner with you and continue laboring with you all across this country. Stay with us now on Gospel of Life. After this break, you'll see our action segment.
There's nothing wrong with your television set. You don't see anything because there's nothing there. Abortion, the most common surgery in America. Why don't we ever see what it looks like? A message from Priests for Life.
I want to be a fireman when I grow up.
I want to be a teacher.
I want to be president of the United States.
I want to find a cure for cancer.
The choice to have an abortion alters the course of the future. Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
I was preaching one Sunday in Florida about the fact that unborn children have no protection throughout their 9 months in their mother's womb. After the church service, I walked across the street to the beach, and the first thing I saw there was a huge sign posted by the local authorities, and it said, "Do not touch the sea turtles or their eggs. They are protected by local, state, and federal law." If in this country we don't have the right to choose to smash the egg of a sea turtle, why do we have the right to choose to smash a baby? It's time for this injustice to be corrected, and for all of us to work together to bring an end to abortion and to protect our unborn children. The single most important activity, the one most effective that we have found for people to do to advance the pro-life message, is to help and challenge people to look at what an abortion actually looks like by showing them the pictures of the aborted babies.
That's right. You know, the word abortion has lost all meaning in society, and so that's why we need to show these images. As you always say, Father, America will not reject abortion until America sees abortion. While we can't rely on the media to show the most common surgical procedure in the United States, we can't rely on them to show that on TV. We have to challenge people to look at these images of what an abortion is.
So we're going to ask people to do something very simple. On our website at gospeloflife.com/images, there are galleries of these photos. What we're asking people to do is, by way of their emails, by way of their publications, by way of just speaking to other people one-on-one, challenge people to go to that link and look at those images, especially if it's somebody that says he or she is pro-choice.
Right.
Say, look, take a look at the choice that you're saying you agree with, and then let's come back and talk.
Right. Let's make sure we're talking about the same thing,
right,
or you know what the choice really represents.
Right.
And when they go to that website, I'd first like to encourage them to look at the unborn child. We have beautiful images of that unborn child. See the humanity of that unborn child, and then look to see what abortion does to destroy that child.
Yes.
The contrast is just unforgettable. It'll really make you realize how damaging, how wrong abortion really is.
Well, and for those that are not convinced about how these images do change people's minds, we have a sampling on our website of the numerous testimonies that we've received from email and from letters of people who have, in fact, changed their minds. They have all kinds of emails coming through that say, oh, I was pro-choice until I came across these pictures, and now I'm 100% pro-life. Or people who say, well, I was always pro-life, but once I saw these pictures, I decided I wasn't doing enough about it. So now I want to get more engaged. It is really, really powerful. Now, young people, especially going into internet discussion rooms, for example, or just sending out to their friends by email, can make this a project. Say, I want to get as many as people as possible to go to these pictures and look at them.
And it can be very simple. To every email message you send out, why not put that little challenge as a footer?
As a footer,
that's
yes.
There with every message, challenging people to go and see the images.
And if you have a website, make a link to those pictures and say, here's a pro-life challenge. Take a look at these pictures and then tell us what you think about abortion.
That's right. Now, in addition to the unborn child images and the same child being aborted, we also have pictures of the actual procedure, both the first and second trimester procedure. And these are pictures that are not done by our organization or some other pro-life organization. These diagrams were done by a medical professional company called
right.
Nucleus Medical Arts.
Yes.
They do the diagrams for textbooks, for surgeons,
right.
for medical schools, for
right.
people who are studying procedures.
And for lawyers in when they have to present in court, about a medical
That's
procedure.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're going to talk about, abortion, well, I wouldn't want it being in late terms, but I think in the first trimester a woman should have a right to have an abortion. I challenge you to go up there and look at the diagram, see what a first trimester abortion is, see how it tears that child apart, and see the invasive procedure that is being performed on that woman, and then see, are you still in favor of that choice?
Because we know that in other movements, when the horror of slavery or child labor or segregation was being exposed, people used the pictures to expose the violence and make the victim visible.
Again, go to gospeloflife.com/images and do it today.
Thank you, brothers and sisters, for joining us on this program. And we need your help to support this kind of work. If you like what we're doing and you enjoy these programs, consider sending us a donation at Gospel of Life. We'll appreciate that, and so will the babies whose lives will be saved thanks to your generosity. We're also grateful to our friends at Life Dynamics for making this program possible. We use their studios, and their staff helps us in the production. And we also ask you to be in contact with us. Send us your questions. Tell us what you're doing together, and God bless you.
The decision to have an abortion not only affects that moment in your life.
Kristen Gordon.
It affects many precious moments to come.
I now pronounce you man and wife.
Please remember, where there's life, there's hope. A message from Priests for Life.
It's positive. I'm pregnant.
My boyfriend panicked.
And I was worried what my family would say.
I just didn't know what to do.
If you're facing an unplanned pregnancy, you have options. You don't have to be alone. Call 1-800-395-HELP. Our services are totally confidential and free. If you're pregnant, call now. There is help.
When I found out I was pregnant, I thought I would lose my job.
My boyfriend told me to choose between him and the baby.
I was already struggling to care for one child. So I had an abortion.
I had trouble conceiving again.
I tried to commit suicide.
I started to have nightmares.
You see, abortion didn't solve our problems.
It just created different ones.
That's why we are silent no more.
We found help in healing, and you can too. Call or go online today.
Friends, as we conclude our program, may I invite you to do four things. First of all, tell other people about Gospel of Life. Tell them when these programs air so that they can tune in and learn more about the pro-life movement. Secondly, we like to hear from you. On our website, gospeloflife.com, you can even send us your prayer requests, and our entire ministry team will be more than happy to lift up your concerns and intentions before the throne of God. Thirdly, we're eager and ready to come to your community, to preach in your churches, to gather with your pro-life groups, and to help inspire you in the pro-life cause. And finally, we ask you to donate so that we can keep these programs on the air. You can send your tax-deductible contributions to us at Gospel of Life Ministries. Again, go to our website, and thank you.